The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box this Friday morning. These are your headlines. Israel appears to retaliate, reportedly carrying out a limited operation in Iran, where state TV reports missile defense systems downing drones over the central city of Isfahan. Asian equities sink, oil prices rise, and the dollar catches a bid as investors seek safety going risk off.
Germany's finance minister Christian Lindner strives for common ground, telling Karen in Washington, D.C., that the EU and the United States must work together on trade practices.
It is in the best interest of the US and the European Union to cooperate closely. We shouldn't introduce policies which harm ourselves, US and EU, but we should work for a level playing field with the competitor China.
Top ECB policymakers converge on June for the likely start of rate cuts, telling CNBC at the IMF World Bank spring meetings it would take a lot to derail that move.
Barring a major surprise, I think we should cut rates because we are now confident enough.
Let me put it this way, I think we would really need bad news for not cutting in June.
Right, we start the show with the breaking news and an apparent retaliation and escalation in the Middle East. According to NBC News, Israel carried out a limited operation in Iran in the past few hours. Iranian state TV reported three drones being shot down in the sky over the central city of Isfahan. As is always the case with these things, we just report on the facts and what the movements are on the markets rather than extrapolating certain events and certain reactions on the back of a limited information at the moment. But what we can quite clearly see is a little bit of a cautious stance from markets. The Nikkei down 2.6%, the Hang Seng down 1%, the Shanghai Composite actually down a very moderate 12 points at the moment. They are coming off their lows, these markets. They were dramatically lower on the first reports of Israeli action, down 1.2% for the ASX 200. As you would expect as well, we've got commodities rallying on the back of this. But again, tempered reaction, actually only going up to the kind of levels we've been trading at their peaks in the last week or so. And what is really interesting in this is that Brent has been higher this week. Brent actually, before the moves overnight and these reports of the Israeli strikes, Brent is actually down 3.7% before that, down to $87. But having been, of course, as you know, above $90. So it's actually not even trading at its highest levels for the week. And I think that's very important. This is a very tempered reaction, both on WTI, which is trading 84.53, up 2.2%, and on Brent crude, which is trading up 1.8%. Gold as well. Again, it's been on an upward trajectory, so the momentum just being endorsed by the latest action. But again, earlier I saw a 2400 handle on the price of gold, now trading below that at 2383. When we look at the dollar crosses as well, the dollar catching a little bit of a bid again. But again, the point on a week where we've seen the ECB seemingly, to Karen and others, confirming that we will have a June rate cut, and actually US policymakers saying, look, we just don't know when our first cut is going to be. We don't even know when, if there's going to be a first cut in 2024 from some people as well. So as such, the dollar was already bid and is again just pushing gently on the continuation of that trend. So you'll notice the pound just down 0.1%. The euro dollar down by half that measure. The dollar actually trading against yen at 154.29 and dollar yuan unchanged on the session. Taking a look at the US futures, and I think it's important also to add that US markets have lost momentum. So they've lost one of their props. There's no doubt about it. The momentum to the upside for now, and it can change very quickly, has been lost. Technology has already been under a lot of pressure the last couple of weeks as well, down 4.3% actually so far this week, with the Nasdaq down over 3% for the week. So it's lost the prop of momentum, it's lost the prop of technology leadership, and it's also lost the prop of a guaranteed lower cost of finance, i.e. rate cuts sooner rather than later. So the market's lost for the moment three of its props as well. Add into that geopolitics as well, and you're possibly pushing against an open door. Right, let us move on and take a look at what's going on with the live action out of the Middle East. And Dan Murphy, who, of course, has been our point man on all of these events as well, joins us once again now. Dan, very good to see you.
Good to see you, Steve. Well, let's begin with what we know, and you've characterized it well so far. Israel has carried out a limited military strike against Iran and is currently assessing that strike's effectiveness and the damage caused. That is according to a source who has been speaking with NBC News about the situation. An IDF spokesman has declined to comment on reports of the strike, but the IDF spokesman has said that there are no changes to guidelines for Israel's civilian population, and that might suggest to us right here, right now, at this point, that Israel is not bracing for a major immediate retaliation. And remember, that's important because we did know coming into this that Israel vowed to respond to Iran's unprecedented drone and missile strike on Saturday. So some of that escalation risk, some of that geopolitical premium had been in these prices. Now, as you flag, Steve, we have seen oil prices, for example, coming off their highs of the day. We have seen flows into safe haven assets, but those flows are appearing to slow down right now, and some risk is coming back to these markets. Nevertheless, the question at this hour is this: will Iran respond to this apparent Israeli operation? And if so, what form could that take? The market indication at this point suggests we may not see a response at all. However, Iran's foreign minister did tell the United Nations today that it will not hesitate a bit to assert its inherent right to give a decisive and proper response to any use of force against it. So the rhetoric is there. We're now waiting to see if there will be any action. And of course, if this upcycle of escalation continues, there is a material risk of a wider regional conflict that's critical for the risk asset and safe haven response today and into next week. But given that Israel's strike caused no immediate casualties, analysts have suggested to me this morning that it could be considered proportionate, at least in some measures, to Iran's attack on Saturday, which might cap that escalation risk for now. It might also explain why we have seen oil prices also coming off their highs of the day. So that's what we know at this point. We're going to continue to track the market reaction over the course of the next couple of hours for you, and of course follow all of the headlines out of this major story in the region. It's back to you.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, some question marks around, you know, some of the areas that have been hit by these strikes, the likes of Isfahan, which of course is a strategic place for possible nuclear facilities. Any word though out of the United States as they wake up to this news?
The United States was informed that Israel would be conducting this operation. We know the Biden administration had said that it would not support any operational activity alongside Israel if it were to directly strike Iran, but it does appear that the US was aware that this incident would be happening. At the same time, with regards to exactly what's been struck in Iran, well, details are still emerging. It was thought that during the speculation on how Iran might respond, how Israel might respond to the Saturday attack in Iran, that we could see potential nuclear facilities being targeted. That does not appear to have been the case. It's believed that this is a civilian airport as well, so that also caps the escalation risk. And at the same time, oil infrastructure and oil facilities are showing no reports of direct attack as well. So we're still learning and trying to understand exactly where this strike has taken place, where these strikes have taken place. But as I said before, no reports of casualties either, which might help to explain the market reaction.
Thank you very much indeed for your reactions to the events, Dan. Thank you very much for that. OK, we'll speak to you later on. German Finance Minister Christian Lindner has pushed back at suggestions the country's debt break is getting in the way of greater investment, telling this channel that fiscal investment is near an all-time high. Well, Karen spoke to Lindner at the IMF World Bank spring meetings and asked him how fragile German growth is.
The German economy has really substance, but we have a lack of competitiveness. In 2014, Germany was ranked sixth in the global competitiveness index, and then there has been a decline, and now we are 22nd. And this is why we have to introduce supply side structural reforms, labor market, less red tape, reinventing our energy system, and a reform of the corporate taxation.
Is the debt brake in Germany getting in the way of investing for the future, preventing you from achieving economic security?
No, it is not. We are investing almost on an all-time high. There is no lack of public sector funding for the infrastructure, for example. The IMF experts, they look at a multi-annual average, and they have not yet acknowledged that over the last couple of years, the amount of public sector investment is much higher. But the debt brake of our constitution maintains sound public finances. Given the situation in the USA, we see that deficits in the budget to pay subsidies to private enterprises can lead to higher inflation rates. And we make progress fighting inflation. And this is not only due to the monetary policy of the ECB, but is a result of our moderate restrictive fiscal policy.
German inflation, it slowed to 2.3% in March, lower food and energy prices coming into the mix. How much of the inflation battle has been won, and how much of it is down to the efforts of the government?
Yeah, the battle is not yet won, but we have made remarkable progress. It is a result of the monetary policy of the ECB, but in Germany we do not counteract the monetary policy. We follow the advice of international institutions like the IMF, and we are following a moderate restrictive fiscal stance, and we are mobilizing capital to reduce the supply side shortages. And so I think we have found a very good balance between fighting inflation and working on improved growth perspective for our economy over the next years. You are probably aware of the fact that our potential growth is only 0.5, and we are preparing a new agenda which aims to double the potential growth as first step in the next couple of years, maybe 2 years.
Well, that was fascinating, wasn't it? Another lady who's been in the news massively recently is the Swiss finance minister. And there's been a lot of criticism about what politicians did or didn't do in advance of the Credit Suisse debacle just over a year ago. Well, Swiss finance minister Karin Keller-Sutter says it's important the government learns its lessons. I'm glad they're looking at themselves as well as other people. Anyway, learns their lessons from the collapse of Credit Suisse, telling this channel it's up to policymakers to come up with legislation. Karen asked Keller-Sutter whether UBS is now too big to regulate.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, it's just important to take the right measures. Although, you know, you cannot prevent every crisis. It's just not possible, because if you have a crisis, usually you analyze it, you take the measures, and then when you have another crisis, you see, oh gosh, the crisis doesn't really comply with the measures, or doesn't really respect the measures that you have taken earlier. You know, so what I want to say is there is a difference, or usually there are differences between crises, and it is difficult to regulate everything. But what we can do now, and what we did, is we evaluated the situation, and we really try to propose the measures that are necessary so that resolvability really is possible.
You could understand regulators being concerned about the risk now that UBS poses, but is there a balance about ensuring that it's not over-regulated so that it can still grow from here?
Well, this is always a risk in every crisis. I mean, be it in banking, or look at the pandemic, or look at other situations where really maybe governments are surprised, or measures have to be taken, also urgent measures. And this is always a bit of risk of a crisis that as a consequence, measures are taken or that over-regulate may be a case, of course, yes.
Coming up on the show, global equity sliding after reports of an escalation in the Middle East. We'll get a check on Asian markets. That's coming up next. Plus, we'll bring you more of our interviews on the IMF spring meetings as policymakers debate the future rate path. And we'll also be live from Tegernsee for the Germany Opinion Leaders meeting, where Annetta spoke to the head of the Christian Democratic Union. We'll bring you that exclusive interview at 7:40 CET.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
The best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
Welcome back. Let's take a look at the commodities market then, and in particular, WTI and Brent crude oil. Oil prices had jumped as much as 3% then on the back of noted escalations out of the Middle East, with Brent crude even crossing that $90 a barrel mark. Not an unfamiliar territory, especially this week. We have seen Brent crude oil hit that mark and then dipping off to $87 a barrel then as well, where we've seen it. Let's take a look at opening calls then out of Europe. Yesterday, markets closed just slightly higher after having bounced around throughout the day. We look like we may start the day in negative then today. Of course, there was a bit of a mixed sentiment across banks leading gains, though, up 1.6% in European trade. Let's focus in, though, on how US could be opening up as well. Some negativity still in play here. Let's remember that yesterday we did see the S&P 500 actually have a fifth day of losses. That fifth day of decline was the first since October as well. And of course, that's when the market began to head a lot higher. Of course, the escalations out of the Middle East could certainly be in play here, but markets were already moving in negative territory, though, or moving lower before the Middle East headlines. Let's get a look out of Asia then, and JP Ong joins us now for a check on the Asian market front. Negativity has certainly been in play then this morning, JP.
Absolutely, Arabilia. Good morning. And yes, Asia also getting caught by that red wave that's really hit market sentiment across this region again. And you're seeing stocks from Shanghai to Seoul actually taking a dip. Now, it's not just those rising tensions between Iran and Israel that sent a flight to safety and also oil prices rising up. There is one more wrinkle, and that's coming out of Taiwan. The TAIEX TSMC reporting an outlook actually for the chip sector recovery that was seen by some as milder than expected. And that weighed on the heaviest weighted stock on the TAIEX and also on chip-related stocks, casting a shadow on other chip stocks across the region. One of the reasons why the TAIEX is the worst performer, arguably, among some of these markets in the region. But again, that flight to safety again, and you're seeing it play out in the bond space here with the JGB yields again and 10-year yields in Japan again, putting on their hat as a possible safe haven play that's also seen more favor go towards the fixed income markets at the expense of some of these equity plays, including the Nikkei 225. Another set of safe havens, when you think of safe havens, is the US dollar and the Japanese yen, which is why when we look at currencies at the moment, a lot of them actually suffered, with the yen actually taking a notable strength despite the fact that they're still comfortably above 154 against the greenback. But again, you're seeing that there's weakness for the Korean won and the Singapore dollar so far this session. The Australian dollar also taking a bit of a step back. There is one bright spot today, and that's because of another safe haven, Arabile, and that is gold. Gold is glittering at the moment, and so are Aussie gold miners at the moment. The ASX gold miner index down under actually doing quite well in today's session, up by about 0.2%. But we also want to take a step back and look at one other sector in Asia that seems to have taken it on the chin today. That is airlines. You'll see here a number of airlines from across the region, all the way from Singapore Airlines down by about 1.4%. Japan Airlines also down by 2.2%. The pressure might come from two places. On one hand, rising oil costs that might mean that fuel expenses for these carriers might go up for the time being, but also the fact that they might have to reroute some of their flight routes that might go over the Middle East might mean that there might be operational uncertainties that they will have to deal with in the future, which might mean that this sector might be grounded for the time being. Gentlemen, it's back to you guys, and good morning once again.
Nice work, JP. Thank you very much indeed for that. Well, the latest developments in the Middle East could have far-reaching ramifications for the global economy. Karen asked some of the biggest players in international finance their views at the IMF spring meeting in Washington, D.C. on Thursday.
The situation in the Middle East is very vulnerable. So first of all, and what we learned from the recent years that, you know, what's happening in the energy, commodity or food markets may have, if it's like, if this is like strong shocks, strong supply shocks, it may fuel and spark inflation in the economies.
The whole trade is now being reshaped, reshaped by the risks, reshaped also by the policies and the tension that exists globally. The region is trying to adjust to that, reduce the negative impact, but also to try to find its place in this new order of global trade.
I don't think that neither the US administration nor China, for instance, would want to escalate or want to see the escalation of this conflict. Because we know that the Middle East is a powder keg and a very challenging situation.
Right, so the markets and global analysts and geopolitical strategists are trying to work out what the latest strike means. And it seems to fall into two categories at the moment, and that will be very important for the destiny of these markets in the next 24 hours and therefore beyond as well. Is this a limited strike which hasn't exacerbated the situation, or is it a strike that is the start of a process that will exacerbate the situation? Now, of course, there are ongoing parts of this conflict which are not going to get resolved very quickly. The devastating situation in Gaza, for instance, as well. The situation with the hostages, and hopefully there is a peace process going on in the background there as well. But in terms of direct conflict between Iran and direct conflict between Israel rather than through proxies as well, people are asking, is this the end or the start of that direct conflict? If it is the end of it, one might argue, actually, that they can draw a line on, for instance, those oil price moves, or on stock market declines on the back of it, on flights to safe havens and to safety in certain bond products, into gold, into the dollar as well. Or, again, do you just not take chances and just take risk completely off the table as well? The point I was trying to make at the wall is that this is not the only factor going on. In fact, out of all the factors, it's the hardest to extrapolate and put into your market positioning scenarios and what you do next in your action. The truth is, though, it's very easy to get the market down at the moment compared to get it up, because the concern about interest rates, yeah, the concern about momentum, the concern about tech stocks having gotten beyond their valuations, and the outlook we're getting from some parts of the earnings season at the moment as well. So there are other factors, but arguably more important factors for making your decisions that you just don't know at the moment and you just haven't got the proper support. So I think it's very important for A, us to be very measured on what is going on in the Middle East, and B, then just to be very tempered also about how we relate that to market activity.
Yeah, and I mean, just to give note as well, from our NBC News colleagues have also just spoken to former CIA Director John Brennan, and significantly he was saying that a lot will then depend on how much damage was done inside of Iran and what was hit, and that could indeed temper a lot of the moves then that we see out of this supposed escalation then as well.
And just look, for everybody who's like looking at this situation, and obviously everyone has huge concern, Iran and Israel obviously are not neighbors. Now, of course, through proxies, they are very close as well, whether it be Hamas or Hezbollah or what the action in the Red Sea. But the fact of the matter is, in order to have direct strikes, this is what someone told me many, many years ago, to have direct strikes, and that's a great graphic illustration. Thank you for showing that map, team. Between Israel and Iran, you can't very easily launch an attack in either direction and have lack of warning as well. So when you do get attacks from Iran to Israel and Israel to Iran as well, it is very difficult to do that directly and have greater damage just from, you know, say drone strikes, for instance, because the air defense systems have so much notice, as we saw on both sides of these recent attacks as well. So it's not the easiest thing in the world to have a direct conflict between the two, is what some of the geopolitical strategists have said to me previously.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to CNBC.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.